Hello and welcome to CJ Evolution, the podcast dedicated to helping criminal justice professionals like you. Now here's your host, fellow CJ Evolutionary, Patrick Fitzgibbons.
Hello everybody, welcome back. Episode 120, Patrick here, CJ Evolution. Whatever you were doing, wherever you were at, thank you for tuning in. Maybe you're in a commute, maybe you're on a bike ride, maybe you're throwing some weights around in the gym. Whatever you're doing, thank you for spending a little bit of time with me. I sure do appreciate it. Without you, without the downloads, without you sharing it with your family and friends, I wouldn't be here. So I'm glad I'm here. I'm glad I'm spending time with you. You know, folks, we all need that special coaching or mentor in our lives to get us to that next level. I'm so happy to be in partnership with my good friend, Kim Ady. She's the CEO and creator of frameofmindcoaching.com, and her team can help you get to that next level. So head over to frameofmindcoaching.com and check out what her and her team can offer. You know, when I was a cop on the street, I used to get in and out of the car, and sometimes that would wreak havoc on my back. You all know what I'm talking about, you first responders out there, getting in and out of the car, walking for long periods of time. The accident scene that you're stuck on for hours on end. Hope you have good shoes. You know, which brings me to my next partnership, pulseharmonics.com. I'm going to have a good friend of mine who does a lot of work with this company that is based out of Boulder. But this is pulsed electromagnetic field therapy. It's a device that can help you really on the road to recovery for aches and pains. And if you head over to pulseharmonics.com and see what they can do for you, I'm telling you, you will not be disappointed. They have an amazing device called the A2000 PEMF, and you can wear it when you're driving. Driving on patrol. It's a very small device that can help you with those aches and pains we all suffer from. You know, wearing all that equipment and wearing a vest and all that stuff, trust me, I know, I've been there. Head over to pulseharmonics.com, see what they can do for you. On to episode 120. I was talking to a buddy of mine a couple days ago about a crime scene, which got me thinking about how important crime scene processing is to the first responder. For those of you out there, you know, listening, a lot of you in the criminal justice field, first responders, police officers, sheriffs, etc., you know this material. But there's a lot of people that listen to the podcast that really don't know how important crime scene processing and the importance of that crime scene is. So I want to take a little bit of time today and talk about the role of the first responding officer. It might be a couple officers responding to that crime scene, because that's going to set the tone, folks, for how that crime scene is going to be handled. And the first responding officers are so critical when it comes to crime scenes. It's very important to talk about. So when a crime occurs, victims and witnesses often call 911. This is especially true if the crime involves violence, domestic violence, any other kind of violent crime. The dispatch calls are received by police, sheriff, state police, highway patrol, and other emergency dispatchers. The dispatchers quickly obtain information regarding the crime and its location, the status of the victim and the suspect, hopefully. And through the communications, the dispatcher relays the information to officers in the field who respond to the incident scene, whatever it is. The first priority for the responding officer or officers is the safety, confirming that the suspect is no longer in the immediate area and is not a threat to the officer or the citizens at the scene. The second priority is given to the preservation of human life. This supersedes anything, folks. I know you crime scene people out there are probably cringing right now, even at the expense of the crime scene. Yes, life supersedes that. So if first responding paramedics or EMTs are on the scene and they're trying to save a life or administer first aid, or maybe the officers are, that's going to take precedent over the crime scene, believe it or not. Peace officers often arrive at the scene prior to EMTs or emergency personnel. I know in my jurisdiction we often do. Therefore, the first responding officer will initiate life-saving measures such as CPR and first aid if we need to. Other officers search the area for the suspect while the officer secures and restricts access to the scene with police barrier tape or other barriers. Other available officers obtain preliminary information from witnesses. After the scene is secure, investigators and forensic personnel are often arrived to process that crime scene. So first things first, the preservation of life when we go to a crime scene or a scene or a call for service. Then, you know, once that scene is secure, once we've searched, maybe we've hooked up some bad guy or bad girls, because girls can be bad girls too. It's not just bad guys all the time. We make that scene secure. You know, then we're going to start securing that scene. You know, we get the people who are injured or there's other things going on with victims. We'll get them shipped off by medical. And then we're going to hold that scene. We'll probably get a search warrant, administrative search warrant, to keep us there. Some of you might be thinking, what does that mean? That means, you know, we need a search warrant in most cases to keep us there. Now, I would refer to your respective agencies and respective district attorney's office for further clarification. But here where I'm at, we would probably get a search warrant to keep us at that crime scene for as long as we have to be there to get everything we need. So one of the biggest culprits of crime scene contamination, in my opinion, is other officers. You know, we're generally, you know, officers are, you know, we're interested in what's going on. We're going to often show up to the scene to figure out, you know, hey, are we needed? You know, we want to take a peek around. And that can be a detriment to the crime scene, folks. Again, the more people you have on the crime scene, the more problematic it becomes. Now, I know we've been conditioned throughout our lives that more is good, but really when it comes to a crime scene, more is bad because you are contaminating that crime scene. As a first responder, you're going to contaminate that crime scene. That's a given. But we want to try to limit that contamination of that crime scene. It's okay if there's 10 people on that crime scene, providing those 10 people, officers, crime scene techs, whoever, are doing something. They're being productive. They're, you know, swabbing, you know, getting DNA. They're doing presumptive tests. They're getting prints or whatever. What happens is people who just want to show up just for the sake of showing up, and they're wandering or meandering around that crime scene. That can be problematic. Now, command officers, command personnel, chief, deputy chief, captains, lieutenants, they might want to show up. That is fine, but you guide them through that crime scene because you had been there for a little bit now. So there should be an established route that you're taking those command personnel, you know, through that crime scene. You just don't want to let people meander, I guess. Yeah, or meander that crime scene. That's where bad things happen, because we have to account for all those people on the crime scene later on down the road in court, folks. So remember, we want to keep the crime scene secure. We want to not let the people on the crime scene that don't need to be there. And we want to turn away people that probably could be there but don't need to be there. And a lot of times those are other officers, folks. Remember, keep a running log of who and when they came to the crime scene, who's on the crime scene, and when they check out of that crime scene. Again, more is bad when it comes to crime scene. Remember Edmund Locard? I don't know if you ever heard of this person. Some of you might have. He was director of the first forensic lab in France. And he lived a long time ago. He's no longer with us. But he really came up with this great theory, the theory of transferability. It's not rocket science, but it is so key to crime scene investigations. Basically, he basically said this. Are you ready? It's very, very, very complicated. Whenever you go somewhere, whenever you go to a crime scene, you're going to leave something and take it with you. I was kidding about being complicated. It's very simple. So think of that in terms of the scene the next time you respond to a scene. You know, not only is more worse on a crime scene, more people, but again, you are going to bring something into that crime scene. You're going to take something with you. And sometimes it's not even evident. You don't even know what's going on. You might have something on the bottom of your shoe. Maybe you've walked along the grass or something like that, and you're taking a piece of grass or dirt or whatever, and you're introducing to that crime scene. Conversely, you're bringing something from that crime scene with you when you leave. Again, you will always leave something and take something with you. If I shake your hand right now, there's a transfer taking place. There is a transfer, believe it or not, that's taking place. I am, dead skin cells are going onto your hand, and I'm getting dead skills from your hand onto my hand. There's a transfer taking place. So if you keep that in mind when it comes to crime scenes, you really will look, at least you'll look at crime scenes in a different way. At least I have over the years. And, you know, by keeping that in mind. And again, there is no such thing. If you look at cases like OJ and other cases where evidence have gotten tossed, or people have, you know, Casey Anderson's another example, there's really no such thing, in my opinion, as bad evidence, folks. There's no such thing as bad evidence. I was always taught that, and I really do believe it. What there are bad chain of custody, bad evidence collection, things like that. Human error usually is what gets evidence tossed from court. Remember that. Very rarely is it because of bad evidence, quote. It's the human error that gets evidence tossed out. So I hope this has been beneficial to you, the first responders out there that are listening. We could talk about crime scene investigation for days, months. There is so much more that encapsulates crime scene processing, crimes, you know, securing the crime scene. But I hope this is a good start. I hope you found it valuable. All you first responders out there, you know what I'm talking about. Thank you for doing the job you are doing. Again, we got a lot of great guests coming on the show pretty soon, so stay tuned for that. If you head over to cjevolution.net, that is the website associated with the podcast. I hope you do. You can find a little information about me. All the shows are right there for you to download and listen to. You could also find my Facebook and Twitter. You click onto those, I'll take you right to where you need to go. And last but not least, if you head over to iTunes with that link on the website, rate and review my podcast. I sure would appreciate it, folks. So with that, take care, everybody. I will talk with you very soon. Be safe, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to CJ Evolution. Be sure to head over to iTunes and rate and review the podcast, and reach out to Patrick on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Anchor, or Snapchat. We'll see you next time on CJ Evolution.